Coming to you live from the quantum realm, where apparently everyone is still alive, it's the Nerd's Finest. Yes, we are still here. My name is Jay.
My name is Ryan.
And for those looking for Maya, she is currently on assignment in India looking for the lost Ankara stones. Yes, she also survived the snap in the quantum realm. We wish her all the luck. And remember, Maya, don't drink the blood of Kali. Okay, so moving on with our setup here. Yes, it's been a while. We've been through some things. We've seen some things. But Ryan, all that matters is we are now pretty much all in the bag before whatever the hell is supposed to happen in a little film called Avengers Endgame, because we are here today to talk about a how best to put this, Ryan? A hero that's been a long effing time coming, right? That's
yes. After nearly 10 years, Marvel finally has a female-led superhero movie. Not a moment too soon, and just when we need her most, Captain Marvel arrives.
That's right, folks. Captain Marvel, starring Brie Larson, Samuel L. Jackson, Ben Mendelsohn, a awesome reprising role of Ronan via Lee Pace. That's pretty cool. He's back here. We get to see a pre henchman version of Digimon Hounsou's character from Guardians of the Galaxy, and a slew of others. A hyper de-aged Coulson, which we'll talk about that as like a half damn you, half excellent, because he was all at once awesome to see him, but man, did he look like a robot! Wow, and he wasn't a robot, but we're getting ahead of ourselves here. So Ryan, of course, we're very excited to be back to talk about this penultimate film leading up to Endgame, and we have lots of thoughts on it. And there, at the end of the day, I just wanted to put out a disclaimer here, at least for me. Ryan, you could probably add to the back end of what I'm about to say here, but Captain Marvel has a ton of moments that aren't meant for me. I, as a white cis hetero male, have pretty much every moment in the history of cinema to choose from for awesome things to go for. So watching this film, and depending upon what I think, ultimately probably doesn't matter. I'm just really glad that this is an awesome film that has a lot of awesome moments for people who haven't had what I've always had. So I'm very excited that we get that to talk about this, but please know that that my opinion of this film should not be taken in any way as uber gospel. I'm just fanboying out at this extremely overdue film for one of the more powerful, more interesting, and just more fun Marvel characters. And then on top of that, it's a badass female. So Ryan, do you have anything to add there?
Every film is about perception. And Jay and I, we're just giving our perception of this film. We love it, but there's certain things we like, certain things we don't. Is it right? Is it wrong? It's just how we see it. And there you go.
There you go. I think that's right here. So we want to kick things off with, last I checked before the snap here, we had a format for how we do these things. So Ryan, I'm pretty sure the first thing we do is we'll let Derek Zoolander introduce this next segment.
What is this?
That's right. What is this? So Ryan, why don't you give us our synopsis as is your duty on this, the Starship, the Nerd's Finest.
All right, please bear with me, listeners. It's been a while, so I might be a little choppy, might lose my rhythm, but hopefully, just bear with me and we'll get there. All right. Set in the 1990s, Captain Marvel is Carol Danvers, a space warrior that can't remember her past, that is caught in the middle of a galactic war between the alien races of the Kree and the shape-shifting Skrulls. With Nick Fury's help, she will try to regain her memories and become one of the most powerful heroes of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. No pressure.
No pressure whatsoever. So So that's the synopsis. Obviously, there were marketing materials, as there always are, right, Ryan? Trailers, yep, and previews and all that stuff. Yeah. Pretty much the normal thing you do for a movie that's coming out. So, I was wondering, what were your thoughts on the promotional materials that that preceded this film actually coming out?
It's funny how some people, I think I'm the opposite of a lot of the reviewers that I follow. They're usually kind of on the same wavelength as I am, but it was kind of split. A lot of people didn't like the first trailer, but then really liked the second trailer. And I was the opposite. Love the first trailer. Looks powerful. Looks epic. The second trailer, I was going to say I dislike it. I was just like, eh. Oh, well, yeah, that was a trailer, all right. Or people the opposite. They were like, oh my God, this is what I was waiting for. I was like, I mean, yeah, looks good. It didn't swing either way. So it's not like if I was on board, this wouldn't make me go off or vice versa. Like, I don't know if I want to see this movie. This trailer wouldn't push me in either direction. The trailer did sell me or lose me. It was just okay. But the first trailer, I loved. Actually, I forgot half of it. I just remember the feelings like, this looks epic. And I love the tagline, discover what makes her. And then they kept the letters H-E-R. And then make a hero. And I never really thought of that. The word her is in hero. And I thought that was just such a damn clever way of playing that. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, I think that was probably the most striking visual element of their marketing stuff. That immediately struck me, and I was automatically jazzed and so ready for this to come out. The one criticism I kept seeing leading up to the film's release was that they felt that Brie Larson's personality in the trailers was a bit stiff and cardboard and to them, I say, first of all, F you.
Exactly.
you just sound stupid. Just stop talking. But on the flip side, they actually preserved more of what she's really like in the film for the film. So while I actually had no problem with the way she was in the trailers, they did kind of hold back a little bit about what Danvers' personality is for the actual film. Like, I really, really, really like Brie Larson. She's really stupid cool. I mean, there's the acting side of things because she's Envy Adams from the freaking Clash of Demon Head. Okay, this is someone that I have adored for forever. But not only for her film stuff, but also for her activism. And standing silently and not clapping while jerkface Casey Affleck was getting an Oscar. So ooh, she is amazing.
Sick burn.
Suck it, Casey. So all that stuff in the previews and whatnot were pretty reserved, and I was actually kind of glad that they did that because Ryan, we've had a podcast what now feels like 10,000 years ago talking about how trailers show too much, mm-hmm, and that has always been one of the edicts of this here fine podcast that you and I talk on. So in that case, I was glad that was something that they adhered to what we always want, which is don't show us everything. Show us a little bit. Show us a little tiny bit. A little tiny summary of events. A little preview of what's going to happen. Huh? So,
thank you, Stewie Griffin.
shout out to my family, guys. Okay, so yes, those are the trailers, and so what else do you have?
It's just to kind of reinforce what you're saying is that there's so many surprises in this movie that the trailers did not even hint at, and I am so thankful for. We'll get into it deeply, but just heads up, like there's some really big surprises I did not see coming, and I'm thankful for it. And also about, I like how you're trying to say, like, I believe the trailers were showing her the warrior, and the movie shows her the warrior and the woman behind the warrior. So there's nothing misleading. They just didn't reveal everything, and I'm happy about that.
Yeah, Yeah, it's almost like the diaper babies were just like assuming that she was going to be a jerk the whole time because they're just so scared of intimidating women. But that's neither here nor there. So, Ryan, I say let's go to the movies.
Come on, Annie. Let's go to the movies.
All right. So, as of this recording, I've seen it once. I plan to see it at least another time in IMAX, which I don't think we really need to sell IMAX too hard on this podcast. You and I have talked about the benefits of the large format screens for not only any type of film, but especially for action and superhero films alike. I am very excited to dig into it. And as is the case with all of our reviews, we usually tend to try and get our critique stuff out of the way early such that we're not really harping on it, because at the end of the day, we're still big film fans. And for the most part, Ryan, we usually really like the stuff that we watch. So we usually try to get most of our stuff out of the way a little early here. So we should probably do and it sounds harsh, but again, it's just the intro to the segment, which is our
damn you.
That's right. Charlton Heston still kicking alive this day on the beach, telling us.
See, this way we get the bad stuff out of the way so we don't end on a downer. We like to end positive here at the Nerd's Finest. So that's just how we roll, people. So roll with us.
Roll ye shall. So, Ryan, my first damn you. I think the film kind of stumbled a bit at the start. But what's weird is, I know we tend to do this sometimes, right? Because we're like, it's a damn you, but it's kind of an excellent as well. I'll say that, for as much as films are lauded for being able to hit the ground running exactly as the second the lights go down and the credits roll, or the intro credits, that is. And I think there's something kind of really funny symbolic about films that kind of sputter at the start, but then like immediately just hit their stride and they just don't let up. And I think this film is a tremendous example of that. And it reminds me of another film that you and I just adore the heck out of, which is Back to the Future, because so many times in that film, the car kind of has this mind of its own thing where it's like, it'll start when it wants. So I'm very excited that kind of as a whole, the whole film was basically at the end of Back to the Future where, all right, like that's right there. The car's ready to go. You know how you're going to get the 1.21 gigawatts into the flux capacitor. You're just waiting on the timer to go. And then the timer goes. And then all of a sudden the engine stalls out and you're like, but you're like building that kind of tension. Like, is it going to start? Is it going to happen? And then when it does happen, you speed off towards the courthouse and the lightning strikes and everybody, words of Doc Brown, everything will be fine. So I thought that the film did stumble a little bit, but I wasn't that annoyed because I wanted to see what they were doing, and it was a different way to go around it. Like a Tarantino film, it's shown somewhat in flashbacks, somewhat like kind of like current events and then catching you up through flashback type things. I can understand some people getting a little lost in that, but I thought it kind of, there's a little bit of an engine sputter, but the second it was humming. So that's mine. So what's yours? Well,
Once again, the power of perception. I actually also hear from people, they think the first act dragged on a little bit. Not for me. I thought, man, we're kicking ass right at the start. Like, she already has plenty of powers. Knows how to fight. I feel like we're on a pretty good pace. So I can see your point of view, but for me, it didn't affect me. I felt like we're running smooth. We're running good here. I don't have a lot of damn yous. I just have little gripes. And there's no real order to this. She doesn't call herself Captain Marvel. No one calls her cat. I think I can't remember what podcast we were talking about, Jay. Also, with Maya, too. Can't remember what movie it was, but it really bothers me when the heroes and villains aren't called by their code names. It's just, like, we're watching the movie. Just, come on. Have faith in yourself. Use your name. Like the Abomination and the Incredible Hulk. They never call him Abomination. Just like one of the scientists were like, well, if you take your DNA and mix with this DNA, the results would be a Abomination. Like, come on, just come on, people. We got people calling themselves, at least in Iron Man at the end, he called himself Iron Man, you know? Like, all he was, I was even waiting for that. No one, they did kind of talk about Mar-Vell. So, Annette Bening is in this movie. Little cameo, stop by, say hi. She was fantastic. Apparently, she's not a human. She's also part of the Kree, and her name is Mar-Vell. So it's two words, Mar-Vell. And Nick Fury's like, it's kind of choppy. Just call her Marvel. And, you know, this throws off the tongue better. I'm like, oh, so I'm digging this. I'm loving this. I'm like, yes, yes, give me more, give me more. And then that's kind of it. They never put the words Captain Marvel together. So that, I know I'm nitpicking, but it bothers me when the hero isn't called the hero's name. Back to you. We'll just keep going back and forth. Jay, what's your next Danny?
Yeah. I guess it. Again, it's funny because like we call the segment the Damn Yous, but then we just like progressively we're like, it's not really a damn you. It's like we kind of like soften the language a bit. We just really like being able to use Charlton Heston's voice to intro the segment, and then we just kind of like, geez, Charlton, maybe like tone it down a bit. But, I think a tiny minor gripe I have is I wasn't too sure about some of the needle drops. This is a tremendous soundtrack, but there's like a couple times where I was like, because I wanted to see if they could come up with a theme. Basically, my gripe is I thought that there was like more music and not enough original theme for Captain Marvel. Like, I wanted Captain Marvel to have a theme. Now I know she has one, but like I got really caught up in like all of the songs that I hadn't heard in like 13 to 15 years. So you know, here's a song by Garbage that I used to listen to all throughout middle school, and so I'm like immediately reliving all those years. But I'm sure she had a fantastic little theme in there somewhere. I just have to watch the movie again so I can hear it.
Yeah, that's the thing with her theme. It's really great, but it's something that I cannot hum. Like, if I hear it, I'm like, oh, there it is. But then yep. I can't remember it right now.
Yeah. So there was that. I wasn't too sure about I'm sure this could be explained somehow, but I don't know if it exists yet. But like you said, we're kind of going out of order here, so spoilers, folks. This is already spoiler free, right? Or not spoiler free. This is spoiler.
We're going to go deep. This is spoiler heavy.
We're digging into it. Yeah. So, the one thing, and I'm sure if they explain it in like a special feature or like a short film, it's not really a problem, but I'm just curious. So, if you open your textbooks to Captain America: The First Avenger, after he crashes the giant megaship into the Arctic Circle and freezes, you'll remember that Howard Stark found the Tesseract before he found Tony, which then led me to believe, and I think most everybody else, that S.H.I.E.L.D. was in possession of the Tesseract all the way up until Loki showed up with the scepter to steal it and then called down the Chitauri, right? Right. Okay, so, but what was weird was, upon watching Captain Marvel, you see that the Tesseract, aka the Space Stone, was in fact in Mar-Vell's possession for a while as she was creating a lightspeed engine to help the Skrulls find a new homeworld, because they were kind of scattered all over the place and they didn't have access to the technology to be able to get from one place to the other. So my questiony gripe thing was, okay, so did S.H.I.E.L.D. lose the Tesseract between when they found it trying to look for Cap and then when Mar-Vell gets it? Or is it just like through the course of time that these things happen? One, you know how it is, Doctor. You move one box in one place and all of a sudden someone throws out a space infinity stone in the trash because they thought it was part of a burn bag, you know, that type of thing. So I guess I'm just a little curious what the timeline is on, you know, like they found it there, but like, did S.H.I.E.L.D. give it up? Did somebody steal it? How did Mar-Vell come into possession of the Tesseract? And then, you know, obviously we know how the Tesseract ends up in S.H.I.E.L.D.'s possession after that, because Goose, who I'm sure Ryan will have our own 2-hour segment on when we get to the excellence about how cool Goose the cat is, but regurgitates it up after swallowing it on Mar-Vell's space station. And goes from there. So yeah, that's the part I'm curious about. I don't know if there's an answer. I don't know if you have any ideas, Ryan. But I'm it's like it's a very soft damn you. It's like okay, so where are we? It's kind of like the Family Guy. So can like the family understand the baby or what's the deal with that? So I'm like, so did they loot?
But yeah, there.
Yeah. Well,
that's one other thing about the damn yous for this movie is really really good movie. But there are some logistic plot holes. Like, it's like, I can get past it. Like when I saw the Tesseract, I'm like, oh my God, the Tesseract. I did not expect that. It was so fun seeing it again. But then it was like, after the movie, I was like, wait a minute. How'd she get it from Howard Stark? Did Howard Stark give it to her? Like, I like you. Work some magic with this. Did she steal it? Is it like an honor system? Like you can take it home, but like the library, couple weeks, got it, you return it. In case no one else has it reserved, you can check it out longer. So yeah, it would be fun if they do like a Mar-Vell one shot explaining how she got it. But it's one of those things like it doesn't make sense, but it doesn't super bother me anyways. If that makes sense.
Like I said, it's not a groundbreaking, earth-shaking problem. It asked a question that I'm like, oh, I'm kind of curious to know how she ended up with you know the Tesseract. So that was kind of cool. And what else you got?
This isn't a damn you for me, but I do understand how some people might not like the places that the music is. Like you said, this place, so many great songs from the 90s. So many great drops. I loved it, but some places where the music is, I could see some people might be distracted. Like towards the end, towards the climax of the movie, Captain Mar-Vell is finally, she had this, I don't know, Jim, if you could explain it. I know you can explain it better than me. She has this chip in the back of her neck that kind of keeps her powers in check, because the Kree is like, what was given to you can be taken from you. They want to keep her on a tight leash. And she finally breaks free from that. And so we're about to have this great fight. And before the fight can begin, boom, here drops, no doubts, I'm just a girl. To me, I liked it. But I could see some people like that kind of comes out of nowhere. Where a lot of the music in this movie is played kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy style. Like, you know, Star-Lord will push play, here's a song. Like a lot of times the songs are like, if you go to a bar, there's a song playing in the bar. That's a 90s hit. So what's that term, Jay, where the music is coming from naturally from within the scene? I can't remember that term.
Ambient.
Yeah.
Ambient music?
Something
yeah.
like that. Where this just out of nowhere, boom, drops. Because it was all orchestra music, boom, I'm just the girl as she gets ready to kick ass. For me, I thought it was cool. I dig it. But I could see some people like, oh, that kind of came out of nowhere. I could see some people not liking it, but the two seats to my right, there was a woman who just, I can't remember the exact word. She either gasped or she was like, oh, or basically she was pure joy when that song dropped. So I don't know, for some people might not like it, but for some other people, it's like, hell yeah, let's do this. So I can understand yeah. your point of view of some of the songs not dropping. I mean, the certain places for music. One of my damnies, so Nick Fury is in this movie a lot. I was surprised. This is almost a two-parter or a two-hander, if you will. Captain Mar-Vell and Nick Fury, which is awesome. I loved it. In the trailer, we also see plenty of Phil Coulson. And Phil Coulson hasn't been in the Mar-Vell movie since, spoilers, he died in the first Avengers movie. Yes, he's been rocking and rolling on S.H.I.E.L.D., but in the Mar-Vell Cinematic Universe, he's been gone. So when I saw him in this trailer, which again, this takes place in the 90s, so it makes sense that he's in here. And like, awesome, we're gonna get more Coulson. It's basically like two cameos. Like, it's like, oh, it's here. Oh, Clark Gregg, are you busy? No, want to stop by for a weekend? All right, cool. Like, I was like, oh, come on, man. Like, I thought we were going to see how Fury and Coulson are super buddies. And we didn't get that. So once again, these are just little gripes, nothing major. Do you have any more dammies, Jay?
Yeah, mine was just piggybacking off what you said, because I know we already alluded to it at the beginning of this episode, but Phil Coulson's de-aging, gonna need to go back to the laboratory on that one, boys. whatever you did to Samuel L. Jackson, you did a great job. Whatever you did to Coulson, do it better. that was some of the waxiest, weirdest de-aging that I've seen on a person to date.
It was the weirdest to date, Jay. Come on, dude.
Come on. Okay, I know the de-aging thing is something that like Marvel's done, you know, differently. I know everybody gripes about the way Robert Downey Jr. looked in Civil War, or the way Michael Douglas looked in Ant-Man and stuff. I'm just saying, for one film to both possess a sterling textbook clinic on how to do de-aging well, and how in that exact same film using that exact same style can screw up so bad. So it was really funny. Again, it didn't like take me too much out of it, because again, like you said, it was cool to see Coulson. It's cool to see him out there. I would have liked to have seen him more, but they almost gave him like Johnny Bravo plastic hair. Kind of looked
that
like
that. I agree with that. Especially when he's in the upper staircase looking down at them. That hair looked mighty high.
Yes. Yes. There was definitely some Johnny Bravo pomade in that hairstyle of his. So, So if anything, we're just getting to like, hey, you know, if you're going to like, maybe don't do Coulson dirty next time. Don't do him so dirty. Give him something to look up to. But those are all the ones that I can honestly think that were worth mentioning right now. Anything else is purely just probably crap, because like I said, there's like tiny gripe things, and everybody's gonna find little things to go around, but I don't think those are things that are worth like being out loud and obnoxious about, because like we said, Ryan, before this, we really enjoyed the film. So I don't have any more. Do you
have I don't have a damn you, but I think this would be a good segue to the saving graces, because it's a question, Jay.
Okay, so here, let's just give everybody pause for station identification, because we are transitioning to our next segment. Excellent. That's right, all of our awesome saving graces stuff must be preceded by a sick guitar riff. So, Ryan, begin your question.
Does Captain Marvel get all her memories back at the end? Like, it looked like she kind of did, because, like, when the Supreme Intelligence knocks you down and says, you're just human, and Brie Larson is just awesome, goes, you're right, I am just human. And they see her remember all the times throughout her life when she got knocked down, like as a kid with a bloody lip, and through the military training, like all these stages throughout her life, she gets knocked down. But then she remembers all those times of getting back up and standing tall. That was so impressive. But then, so it made you think, oh, she's got him back. But does she have all her memory? Like, does she remember everything, or just some more of these pieces? Because she never directly said, I remember everything. She didn't do a whole, you know, Jason Bourne, I remember everything. That didn't happen. So, like, because that way you could explore more things that she can learn in the sequels. But I'm like, yeah, but just, I just wanted to know, what do you think? Does she have all her memories back?
That's a really good question, Ryan. And I don't know if I have an answer, because I really didn't give it that much thought. But now that I'm thinking about it more, maybe she doesn't. Maybe she got like the gist, right?
Cliff notes. But
as far as yeah, like a general tontine of who she was, and then maybe maybe in effort, maybe while she's helping the Skrulls find a new planet, she's like kind of remembering pieces along the way. You know, lest we forget, folks, the film surrounds an incident where she shoots a Kree blaster at a Tesseract because again, this lightspeed engine is basically made with designs using the Tesseract as a power source. So basically a Tesseract engine.
No, an engine.
And she blows it up, and then that's how she she absorbs the brunt of this explosion. So like, I don't know what Tesseract engine exhaust energy would do to a person's brain. We assume we've saw the wide gamut of what that would do to somebody because she forgot who she was. She was taken back to the Kree. She was taken back to Hala, and given the transfusion by Jan and accepted and brainwashed into being a person of extreme power and use to the Kree. So I can't presume that she would get everything back. I would. The end credits scene kind of gives you the sense that, yeah, she figured out and remembered most of it because she can still remember Fury and all that stuff. So that makes sense. But yeah, I would say when she departs, maybe you're right. Maybe she's still searching because I don't know. Like I said, I think she's got a handle on things, more of a handle than she had on before, certainly, because she was kind of lost in the woods for a bit there. But again, that scene where she is at the dinner table and Lieutenant Trouble is showing her all the pictures. Hey, this is Auntie Carol. This is when you're with this, when we were just up for Halloween. And I was Amelia Earhart and you were a vegetable and just all that other cool stuff. And you can see like, that's one of those moments where she's starting to piece it all together. But yeah, by having her power, oh my God, I'm sorry. I've laughed about this already out loud in my head, but now I'm saying it. He says if you remove the restraining bolt, he might be able to play back the message in its entirety. So in this case, it's if you remove the restraining bolt, Captain Marvel will be able to do everything she's supposed to.
Wow.
So once that gets removed, you know, I would assume that kind of unblocks some of the memory issues that she's having. So I would say that could be a big thing. Small sidebar, Supreme Intelligence Annette Bening, terrifying. Whatever they did to her eyes, whatever they did to her hair, she got real creepy real fast. Wendy Lawson Annette Bening, very palatable. Very can totally watch that all the time. But the eyes on Supreme Intelligence Annette Bening, I won't say they're as scary as Beetlejuice's eyes when he's the Bannister snake in Beetlejuice, one of the more terrifying Tim Burton creations ever, but it's pretty high up there. So kudos to the Supreme Intelligence for goading Captain Marvel into actually remembering everything such that she could win. So that's a very long-winded way to say, maybe.
And with that very short seconds. Remember, we're in the quantum realm. Time just freezes here. You got to be careful.
Yes.
All right. To the saving graces. Just straight at it. Brie Larson is fantastic. She is amazing as Carol Danvers. I can't come up with words to truly best express my feelings because she's subtle. She's awesome, yet subtle at it. And that's so hard to do. Because with a like first origin movie, the person can be more like, oh, shucks, or woo-hee, you know, when they're doing the powers. She doesn't do that, but yeah, it's still awesome at the same time. Subtle, yet so charismatic. It's just, she is fantastic as Carol Danvers.
That's a great throwback to the earlier episodes, Ryan, of our fun little program here about how you were so against the woo-wee! Yeah. You know, just how against expressing jubilant joy you are. So for those of you out there who forgot, Ryan hates joy.
Lies, sir. Lies. You are free with all of your lies.
I know. Yeah. Okay. You're right. Fair enough. I have a tiny theory about something because you mentioned it earlier before we recorded talking because as of this recording, Ryan is currently reading Higher, Further, Faster, More, the graphic novel for Captain Marvel. I have yet to partake, but I would like to in the very near future. And he was running down some of the similarities between the book and what's in the movie. And so she in the book that Ryan described, she does have a cat in this one, but in the book, she refers to the cat as Chewie. Now in the film, cat's referred to as Goose. I think we can mostly assume that's a nod to Top Gun. I would be shocked if that wasn't a very obvious thing, but that is what it is. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, so they it would be a stretch to have yet another Star Wars reference in a Marvel film, because we've already kind of gone ham on that with Peter Parker. You know, this really old movie with you ever seen this really old movie, Empire Strikes Back, from Civil War? He's like, hey, where'd you get this guy? It's not important. So I was thinking about, and again, the cross promotional thing, because in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I'm Mary Poppins, y'all, the famous exclamation from Yondu. So I'm a little leery about the cross pollination. I would like these things to stay separate, but there was I had this small theory, because I thought about it for a moment. I'm like, you know what? They couldn't do an obvious Star Wars reference, but they did a subtle one. Hmm? Her nickname as a Kree is Veers, as in General Veers, who took down Echo Base in Empire Strikes Back. Hello, that's subtle. So it's a dumb theory. It's really not of any consequence. But I was just saying, in one area, they couldn't go for an obvious Star Wars reference. But for half the film, she's referred to as another character from a Star Wars film. So basically what I'm getting at is, stop referencing all of your now owned IPs. We know you own everything. No reason to be over the top about it. Or heaven forbid, you suddenly decide to watch Patton Oswalt's famous clip from his Parks and Recreation cameo, where he explains how Marvel and Star Wars could cross over, and it makes too much sense.
That's pure so, joy right there. Do yourself a favor, listeners. Check that out.
Yes. So, yeah. So that my saving grace is that they still found a way to shoehorn Star Wars reference in there, despite my overall frowning on the practice in the first place. So, Ryan, what's your next fun thing to talk about?
Brie Larson's chemistry with Samuel L. Jackson is amazing. They are awesome together. They're individually both great, but when they're together on screen, that screen just lights up. It was so much fun. It was like a 90s buddy cop movie, but with space battles. And I didn't realize I needed that in my life. Apparently I did need that in my life. And I'm glad Marvel gave it to me, because it was fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. I really like them both. They even de-aged, like, yeah, you could visually see it. Obviously, this is I don't want to say a less hardened Fury, but this is a different Fury, a younger, more spry, obviously dual-eyed version of Fury, which it is pretty funny now. Everybody's talking about basically the line that he says, I trusted somebody once and that's how I lost my eye. And it's kind of funny how, if we're going to take this literally, it's because he trusted a cat or a flurkin, as we are now told that is the type of species that Goose is. So, yeah, that is pretty amusing. I really like that as like kind of a gotcha moment. So here's Samuel Jackson. Because again, in Civil War, when he goes and lays flowers at his own grave, it says on the tombstone for Nick Fury, the path of the righteous man. So it's like, okay, all right. Of course, there's going to be a lot of tongue-in-cheek stuff around Fury where he's going to be this badass, but there's going to be like these neat little side things where it's like, oh, he's like kind of a cool guy and like not really that much of a jerk. So it was kind of neat how like he masks this whole big betrayal of a cat snatching his eye out as like, was it a former lover? Was it a partner that he spent years on the force with and suddenly turned and took his eye as compensation for having to deal with him all those years? No, it's just he trusted a cat too much.
But yeah, I want to talk more about that, about Samuel L. Jackson's acting in this movie. Because yes, in Avengers and post-Avengers, yes, Fury is a badass. He's got a chip on his shoulder because he's seen things, man. He's seen things you wouldn't believe. But here...
And now with only one eye.
But yes, it's the 90s. Like you said, he actually has been in wars. He's been a colonel. He's been a spy, but for the past couple of years, he's been writing a desk at S.H.I.E.L.D. And he's never seen anything, never seen, didn't even believe in aliens, and now he's in the middle of an alien war. So I like to think Fury in present day, badass. Fury in the 90s, cool, but he's not as jaded yet as he is in the present. So he's still a little more fun, a little more for adventure. So I did like how it's still Fury, just more of a light-hearted Fury, if that makes sense. Like, he's not silly, he's just not as... He hasn't seen things yet. So...
Yeah, we pretty much see, like, kind of the jumping point between the type of character that... The type of person that Fury was, and then what he ultimately became from what we saw. Who, again, last post-credit scene from Iron Man, boom, there's Samuel L. Jackson's Nick Fury. Like, that's like Apex Fury
yeah,
right there.
There it is.
He's like,
there
all right, it is. I would like to talk about a really awesome thing that I enjoy in movies very much, and they will always make me cry, and it's scenes where characters learn how to fly. I am a blubbering idiot every time a character, like, against all odds, finds a way to just fly. Be it Superman, be it like even with Batman, just him learning to glide, that's a form of flying. Even Buzz and Woody, I just like people learning how to fly, and I really liked the reaction shot because at this point, by this point I mean during the point of the film towards the end where Captain Marvel is in. Again, we're referring to her as Captain Marvel. The movie doesn't, but we sure as heck will refer to her as Captain Marvel. And that's something we hope that happens in Endgame. Though it would be really funny if just they never call her that. She just becomes Carol. Where's Carol? Carol? Just becomes like one of those weird things like you're shouting at HR to do something, which is really dumb. It's like, yeah, Carol's going to take care of that. Yeah, Carol, you know, Carol is pretty... She's the strongest of all of us. She's going to take care of that. So, like, now you're like, oh, okay, so Carol is now the boss of everything. We have to answer to Carol. All glory be to Carol. Anyways, so she's flying around defending against a impending Kree attack, and she was riding an escape pod that Jude Law was in, and... So they crash back to Earth through Earth's atmosphere, and he kind of does this like flight maneuver thing to kind of shake her off. And so now she's just free falling. And up to that point, the only way that Carol was flying was if she had a ship between her hands. So now we see this kind of cool moment where she kind of like does the little Luke Skywalker, close your eyes, become one with the Force. And then all of a sudden, guess what? You can fly now. You know, cue the Peter Pan music. You can fly, you can fly, you can fly. And then she's just even more ridiculously awesome and powerful. And I really like that. And more of Carol Danvers flying. It reminded me a lot of when Ryan, did you ever see the DC direct animated film, The New Frontier?
No.
DC, The New Frontier? Okay. In that, it kind of... is a neat little, it was based on a series that Darwin Cook did. Darwin Cook, RIP in peace, amazing comic book artist. Wish you were still here. It basically does like a neat overview of like the golden age of comics, but it has a large plot line about Green Lantern. And there's a part in the comics, and then they do a really good job of it actually in the animated version, where it's Hal Jordan, like he's a fearless flyer and he's always flown with planes. But now that he's Green Lantern, he gets to fly through space without needing any of that. So it's like this really cool coming of age moment where he's like, I can freaking fly now. And I'm really glad they gave that to, I think they did a really good job of giving that to Carol Danvers. Because again, let's not forget, Carol Danvers is known to be a phenomenal pilot. She knows how to fly. She went through literal hell multiple times to be able to fly. And to give her that shot and then just to blow everybody up. It was great.
Sorry. Mine's all jumbled with amazing things. Something that was going to be a joke, but then had actual sustenance to it. Gravitas, if you will. After she's just defeated the Kree accusers, blew up all their warships. Just, she's in full control of her power now. Just kicking ass, taking names left and right. She flies back down to Earth to confront Jude Law one last time. And he looks serious. He's got his game face on. He's got both blasters in his hands. They're about to face off. But then he puts his guns in his holsters. I'm so proud of you. I knew you could be so great. This is amazing. We still have a lot to learn. Can you still keep your emotions in check? Can you actually defeat me hand-to-hand combat? I always knew you could one day, and today is the day you prove it. And then boom, he just gets shot with a proton blast. Like, I was like, oh my, that's because I actually thought they were going to go to old school fisticuffs, actual fight, you know, fist to fist. And they didn't. They actually pulled the Indiana Jones move where you think there's going to be this great battle. This guy's got this crazy sword, flipping it all around. And Indy's like, I don't have the time or energy for this, and just shoots him. She did that. So I'm like, oh, that's a great joke. But it's more than just a joke. She, you know, knocks him like 50 yards back. She then walks up to him and goes, I have nothing to prove to you. And I love that. It doesn't matter if she could or could not beat him in, you know, hand-to-hand combat. It doesn't matter. She has nothing to prove to him. And I thought that was amazing. Like, could she have beat him? Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe go fuck yourself, because it doesn't matter, because she has nothing to prove. Thank you, Mark Wahlberg from The Departed, for giving me that great line. But yeah, I thought that was a really sweet move. Like, it was funny, but also it carried weight. Like, no, I don't have to prove anything to you. I know who I am, and that's enough. And like, loved it. So the acting is just amazing in this movie. So Jay, any other stuff that is thrown at you?
I gotta say, the design choices they did to give her a kick-ass mohawk when she's doing a little bit of her the underwater stuff towards the beginning of the film, and then when she's flying at the end. Which, by the way, Ryan, I'm glad this film has given us yet another amazing fist pound gift to be used on any form of social media, because after destroying all the mega negasonic teenage warheads that they fired at Earth from the Kree battleships, and she destroys them all, and then she flies through one of the ships and she just flies up to the view window and stares Ronan in the face and just does the nice little like fist in hand thing, boom, and then like her tesseract power fueled fist bump to herself thing does this like really cool starburst thing that's like the whole width of the ship, and I'm like, man, if real people could do that, like fist bumps would be like the coolest shit ever, because that was like that oh man, just like this is a bit of a tangent, but just roll with me on this, Ryan. I used to play Robotech a long time ago when I was in summer camp for YMCA, and so kind of like in a role-playing game, you know, depending upon how you roll, you can like decide what to do, like based on what your role is. I know I'm explaining RPGs to people that probably know what it is, so just for the sake of my own stuff, just to make sure I'm saying it out loud correctly. But there's a part where like I rolled like a natural 20 on something, which meant obviously for those who are not in the know, that's a very good roll. So I basically just said, I would like to just twirl my blades in like this really artistic dance motion, and then the guy's like, you do that with ultimate efficiency and the enemy runs away. So so that was what this reminded me of. So I'm glad that they gave Captain Marvel this just awesome moment to just destroy a crap ton of warheads that are about to glass part of the planet, and then not only that, she flies up to the windshield of the Kree ship and just does, nah, dog.
Come at me, bro.
It was really, yeah. It was just phenomenal. But like I said, her mohawk helmet thing that they do, which again, at the end of the day, it would be nice if she had a hair tie, I think, right? At this exact recording, I'm seeing that my wife has a hair tie in, and I'm thinking, you know, maybe Captain Marvel could have used that, but she kind of had one because her helmet was cool and gave her a kick-ass mohawk. So that was that. I thought she looked pretty darn cool with that outfit that they gave her. I am really excited about this Ooh. After credit scene, Ryan. Can we talk about the first?
I thought you would never scene? Ask. Let's do this. So before we do, Jay, actually, let's
Yes.
Oh, I can't think of the word. God damn it! I was going to try to do that. Hopefully, you'll cut this out in editing. I was trying to think of that. I was trying to do the Willy Wonka line, like, oh, what's he say? Like, oh, the suspense is terrible. I hope it'll last. That's what's wrong.
You know what? I like the journey you went on there. Or maybe oh, I don't God. That. Okay. So, okay. So you want the tension. It's building. It's there. So,
before we talk about the mid-credits,
yeah,
I want to talk about the Infinity War end credits. So Nick Fury, when it's the worst of the worst, who does he call for help? He calls for Captain Marvel. He gets his two-way pager, calls for help. And when I saw that, I was hoping, please. And the main thing I was looking, not the main thing, the thing I was most hopeful for the Captain Marvel movie, I wanted to see her answering the call. Like, I want to see her. It doesn't have to be in a fight. Maybe she's just, you know, chilling on a spaceship, having some space tea, and see that ringer go off and hits that. Basically, just show her, accept the call. She's on her way. So now we're watching the credits, Jay. The credits. Oh, and with the last song by Hole. Fantastic song for this movie. It's great credits, great song. And then we see the pager, Jay. We see the pager, and the energy cuts out. Like, wait, what? Oh, are we in present day? Are we in present day? We are. We see Captain America with his beard and blonde Black Widow looking at the population of the Earth, saying only 3 billion. And Captain America goes, this is a nightmare. And Black Widow's like, I've had better nightmares. Now, I was like, damn, dude, that was a great line. So I like how we're caught up to speed. I was like, are they going to do it? I was like, oh, no, we're at the Avengers headquarters. So I guess we're not going to see her. Maybe, I don't know, how are they going to do this? Black Widow's like, restart the signal again. Fury was talking to somebody, and I want to know who's that other person he's talking to. And she turns around, and there's Captain Marvel with longer hair. Looks like she's been through some couple tours, seen some shit, and just says, where's Fury? And I lose my mind. This, you know what that means, Jay? Do you know what that means? When Avengers Endgame starts, Captain Marvel's already there. She's at the top. Not like Infinity War, like, oh, we had this great movie, Black Panther, and then we don't see Black Panther until like 2 hours into the movie. No, Captain Marvel is going to be at the top of Avengers Endgame. I'm probably getting way too excited over this. So please, Jay, tell me your thoughts on this mid-credits scene.
I am overjoyed. It was probably the... Oh, geez. Because the last couple end-credit scenes, because we had Ant-Man and the Wasp. So they had the Quantum Realm thing where he's stuck there. And... you know, the end credits scene to Black Panther didn't really have too much to like lay the further groundwork to like bring Captain Marvel in. So this being, you know, we already got like a teaser trailer, right, for Endgame. And they're saying that, you know, from what we've been reading, right, that the marketing materials for Endgame is largely going to be only from the first 15
exactly,
minutes.
Yeah, they
the
said
movie.
Roughly the first 20 minutes. Everything that we've seen for the marketing for Endgame, first 20 minutes ish.
Yeah. So if we're, it'll be interesting because in that we see that Cap has already shaved. So I'm curious as to, you know, like you said, if Captain Marvel's already there, right? Like we can assume that she's already part of the fight. Now they could pull a fast one on us and say that shortly after she arrived, they said, some purple dude who disappeared into the universe. We need you to go find him. And then she's like, okay, see ya.
Okay.
And then, oh, she's not there anymore. Like, I guess that could be a thing. But what's weird is, like you said, if there's only a X amount from the actual movie being shown to hype it, I'm very curious. They already faked a shot from Infinity War, right? It was a shot of where like Hulk and Cap and everybody are in Wakanda, flying in, running at the screen, and then it says boom, Infinity War. That was a fake shot. That wasn't in the movie because Hulk didn't Hulk out at that point, and that was a completely staged thing. So marketing materials can be fake.
See, what I'm thinking is too, like this. One of the, I believe it's a Super Bowl trailer for Endgame, where Cap is saying, "We don't move on." And you see, like, it almost looks like the surviving heroes are at the HQ walking single file. Like, you just kind of see their shadows. There's kind of like a gap, like a big gap to the left between the heroes. I'm wondering if that's Captain Marvel. People are wondering, why is there a gap here? Could it be like Tony? Could it be Iron Man? I'm wondering if it's Captain Marvel now. So, just so much.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, it's a good thought to have around, because it also does kind of quash the theory that Captain Marvel finds Tony, or maybe she does go find Tony, but maybe it's not on the way to Earth, because people are thinking like, ooh, she gets the call to come back to Earth, and well, she's on her way back. Hey, what's this ship just drifting out in the middle here? Oh, there's friggin' Nebula and Stark just float aimlessly out of nowhere. But maybe that's still how he gets found, or like you said, she gets there,
tells him, "Hey, this big purple dude wiped off half her planet, including Fury," and she's like, "Okay, I got this." Goes into space, bumps into Tony. There's just so much delicious possibilities, Jay. I'm loving that. There's so many. We both know so little about this movie, yet there's so many awesome possibilities. You know what? We're getting too far off. Back to Captain Marvel. Great mid-credits to truly tie in these movies together. I believe you said in the beginning of our podcast, Jay, all the pieces are here. Everything's lined up. We are now truly ready for Avengers Endgame. But then how do you feel about the final post-credit? I have mixed feelings.
I think... I think everybody's so worried about whether or not Captain Marvel is going to be this Deus Ex Machina thing. What if Thanos just shows up and all of a sudden Goose comes out of nowhere and just freaking swallows him? Huh? What about that? What if that could be a thing? Because that would be actually kind of fun. Everybody's so focused on, Captain Marvel's like, "Yeah, I'm not gonna fight your war. I'm gonna end it." And Thanos is like, "Oh, what do you think?" And then she's just like, "Oh, here's Kitty." And then it goes blah, 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 and just like swallows him whole. And then like the gauntlet just kind of does that thing where it's like spinning on the thing and then just falls over. Bonk. Yep. That problem solved. Just call everybody back now. It's no big deal. I thought it was funny. But here's the weird part, Ryan. I think maybe this is where I'm getting some of your mixed feelings about it. I am curious about what they're deciding to be the last thing. I think, in my opinion, if I'm still in charge, okay, I know that's a really, really conceited and who am I to deign myself ever having been in charge of this stuff? Who says if I even would have gotten as far as this is, if I was in fact in charge, but were I in charge, if I'm making people stay through all the back end of stuff, I would like that to be the consequential, the one that has the most meaning end credit scene. Like, have the mid-credit one be kind of like throwaway, like, "Hey, it's pretty funny. Here's Goose hocking up a Galaxy Tesseract hairball on Fury's desk," right? That's kind of fun. But, like, have, like, the end thing. Now, I like what they did by changing it up with Homecoming, where it's like, "So, you waited all this time and
patient,
nothing to show for it." Like, that was a... So that was a phenomenal twist to what their formula was, but I don't know. Do I think it deserved that part? Maybe not. I don't know. I still like that they, like you said, they he already has the Tesseract, right? Shield already has the Tesseract. It's still a thing. So there's not really too much that has to be done there, right? To have it be an excellent, but you know what? I'm rambling. tell me why you have mixed.
Just gotta touch upon it. Like, I feel like the mid credit, if you're gonna have one funny one, be the middle. I totally agree with you. Let the final post credit be the awe-inspiring, oh dude, I can't wait for what's next. Because it was kind of the opposite. You got that amazing mid-credit scene. Okay, we're set up for Endgame. Let's do this. What could they possibly show at the end? Oh, it's Goose, the Flurkin Cat. It almost seems like a full minute coughing up the Tesseract. We were kind of joking about it. Like, ah, he coughs it up. But it went on for a while. Like, it's like 10 to 20 seconds of the camera just on Nick Fury's desk. Like, what's happening? What's going on? Goose jumps on the desk. He's kind of looking around. And then does the whole cat thing. And goes on for a while. Stops. You think, oh, no, I'm good. And then you know, barfs up the Tesseract. And then goes on to, you know, lick its paw and rub its head like it's a normal cat. So, yes, it was funny. But it totally reminded me of Spider-Man Homecoming. Patience. Sometimes it's not worth it. It's just like, that's what we waited for? So yes, it's funny, but I can see some people. Also, I believe if you're a cat person, you will love it. If you're not a cat person and just all dog person, you're going to hate it. So that's what I feel like. And I'm both. I'm neutral. So, but yeah, if you absolutely hate cats, you're going to probably like, I waited for this. But yeah, I thought it was cute, but I don't know if I wanted to wait all of it.
That's fair.
But you know what, Jay, we've been talking. I think we've been rambling too much. Let's get down to brass tacks, sir. We gotta. This is tough, but you know what? We gotta do it. We gotta grade Captain Marvel. Final thoughts?
All right.
Well, final thoughts and grading.
So well. Let's do a quick final thought. We didn't really mention the bad guys in this one too much, so I figure we just do a shout out because I did like the bad guys in this one, or especially the ones that looked to be the bad guys, but then turned out to not be the bad guys. Specifically, the Skrulls, the entire menace with which that this whole thing is predicated upon, about how the Skrulls are going to invade and they will become a swarm and yada yada yada. And I was very happy with. Brian, not Brian, Ryan, you're my co-host, not somebody named Brian. I already had one film this year where Ben Mendelsohn was a bad guy and he was Nolan Sorrento in Ready Player One. I think he was in another film as like the Sheriff of Nottingham, but last I checked, that Robin Hood wasn't even released.
Or maybe it was released, but it was dead on arrival. Like it bombed so hard at the box office. Okay. That's a story for another day.
Oh, cool. All right. So, yeah, in that case, I am glad that Ben Mendelsohn is alive and well and able to still be in, you know, films. So he was a very, very awesome Talos in this. I thought, again, it's weird, Ryan, because every other time I've seen Skrulls in any sort of comic, they are super the bad guy. Just super the bad guy. There's the super Skrull itself. I was brainwashed into thinking that Skrulls will forever.
Because they still are in the comics. Like you have Nazis, you have stormtroopers, and you have Skrulls. Good old cannon fodder evil. But then they switched it on us, Jay. Even when they told us the truth. And when Ben Mendelsohn is telling like, no, we just want to find a home. Like, he's lying. So he's gonna.
Yeah. You exactly. Lying, liar,
and then it was
lies.
Later when he actually saw that. Oh no, he's just trying to get back to his kid and family. So I was like, wait. So he's not evil? Like, I just couldn't let that go. So it's both awesome. That's the surprise I was telling you about earlier, listeners, is that the Skrulls are not the true villains of this movie, and that blows my mind. I'm both super happy, like, wow, what a huge twist. But then also a little sad and like, but that we waited so long to have the Skrulls as our super villains.
That's true. They theoretically they could still be a largely nefarious race. We're not. Ben Mendelsohn could be part of a splinter cell. Or even
a better idea. Terrible. This is what they're trying to show. Because at the beginning of this movie, you're thinking, just, you know, it's always that I said, like, these are the good guys, these are the bad guys. When there's a war, these are the good guys, you want them to win. And the other side of the war, these are bad guys, you want them to lose. And I like how towards the end of this movie, they're like, no, life doesn't work that way. Like,
no,
not every race is all, like, humanity. Are we all good? Hell no. Are we all bad? No. And so that's the thing with the Skrulls, like, just like humanity, we're not all evil, we're not all good, so we could have a group, like, I want Ben Mendelsohn just to keep being a good guy, but we could always have a bad group of Skrulls, so that's also possible. But I like what they're saying is, not every race is all good or all evil. So I think in the long run, it's worth it to have that big twist reveal that the Skrulls aren't evil. You know what? I go back on it. I think it's for the best, because it really makes you think. Because I like how he even said too, like, she was apologetic to him, like, I am so sorry. He's like, this is war, my hands are just as filthy. So I like how he wasn't like a holier than thou character. Like, no, we've both done some shitty things, but we're here now. Let's go to the, you know, let's look forward to the future. Let's make the future better. So I dig that. I feel so, listeners, I'm sorry. I thought we were over, but then Jay brought up this amazing point. That's the thing. There's so many good things about this movie. It's hard to just put in a nice little neat package.
Well, we would be remiss if we didn't mention, you know, the whole reason why Captain Marvel was fighting in the first place, because it is a interesting storytelling dynamic, because it's basically she was brainwashed into fighting a war for largely deceptive race of people, but then realizes that they're fighting for all the wrong reasons, and she sides with those who are being persecuted, aka the Skrulls. And you find out that Mar-Vell was a Kree who did not agree with what else all the other Kree were doing. So it's a really good film to illustrate the hazards of war, and what were you actually fighting for, and what type of person do you want to be when you're fighting, and what side do you want to take. And, you know, all the stuff with Maria, just a great on-screen relationship with a best friend, and then helping be basically a surrogate aunt, actual aunt, because she's Auntie Carol to Lieutenant Trouble. Just phenomenal interactions between those two, because Maria definitely had the look of somebody who was like, you've been gone, was assuming you were dead, and now you're just back and you can have fire shooting out of your hands. Like, what am I supposed to do with this information? So they did a really nice job of using the relationship that she had before the crash and subsequent brainwashing as this pulling her back to center, pulling her back to a side of moral judgment that is clear and honest to do the right thing. So it's very cool to see that. I mean, never in my lifetime, Ryan, did I think I'd see a Skrull that I would like to shake hands with, but here we are. So that's just the times that we live in, but there's obviously room for to be stabbed in the back, because it's still comic books. There's still twists and many turns that we probably have left to address. I'm overall very pleased. Like I said, to each their own on whether or not the film started off on time, or if it sputtered a bit, or if the music got in your face. I think largely, Ryan, I am excited to add this to the multi-watch thing, because I will definitely be wanting to watch this again. Her fight with her hands bound and whatever those cylinders are while she's getting probed by the Skrulls and stuff, and she couldn't fire them off at first, so she's like, well, I can't melt these things off, so I guess I'm just gonna have to beat people up with them. That was pretty cool. And I don't know. Any film that gives us more of the main protagonist just screaming at a oncoming attacker and then beating them up, more of that, please.
Yes, please. More of that. Oh, I really hope she, worst case scenario, in case Tony Stark dies in Endgame, I so want her to have at least a couple scenes with Robert Downey Jr. I feel like those two would just be fantastic with each other. They both got sass to them. Like, I love how towards the end they're coming at it like, oh, you guys want to arm wrestle for the Tesseract? Like, just the zingers. Oh, God. It'd be so fantastic with them. So this is a great, great addition to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Thank you, Captain Marvel. Just thank you.
Okay, so having said all of that, Ryan, we do have to render a judgment. So I think it's about that time.
Judgment time.
That's right, Dredd. It's judgment time. So, Ryan, how shall we rate? Should we rate this on a scale of friendly Skrulls? A one out of ten friendly Skrulls?
One out of ten flirking cats. How many flirkins do you get?
I very much like that. So, I am giving 8 flirkins. I am giving 8 flirkins to Captain Marvel. The only thing that was holding it back was more everything, more banter, more of this other stuff. But again, that's an 8 flurkins on my scale. The one thing I want to go out with saying, and I did mention this, I did started to see this a little bit in preparation for this review. I saw a lot of people who were saying like, oh, the movie's kind of bland. And then I started noticing a lot of those are dudes saying it. So it's like, you have to realize that, as I stated at the top of the show, what may seem bland or not new to you in this film has been a long time coming for a lot of other people who haven't been able to get this moment, namely women. There have not been a lot of these moments. I think, you know, all the times that, you know, like some people like to prop up Wonder Woman as just like, yep, that's it. That's all they got. Shake their hands. We're done here. Right. But no, we have Valkyrie from Thor Ragnarok. And we have Black Widow, but like in terms of leading tentpole Marvel films, Captain Marvel does a phenomenal job of establishing something that a lot of young women and older women and middle-aged women have been waiting for. And I don't agree that the film is bland. I think the film is great, but I think the problem with the other people saying that it is bland is that they are too saturated in all of the really cool things that they've always got to experience without actually taking a step outside. It's like, the fight scene at the beginning was really the best scene of the whole movie. Well, no, it wasn't, because flying through the air and ultimately not fighting Jude Law to just be this total FU to toxic masculinity was amazing. So you can take your bland stuff and shove it up your flurkin.
So, there you go. So I also give it 8 flurkins. It was a lot of fun. Good movie. You know what? I'll even say yes. Like, fantastic movie. It's not the best Marvel film, but it doesn't always have to be. Every Marvel release doesn't always have to be, oh, this is it. This is the best one. This is the best one. You could just have a great movie. And this is what it is. It is a great movie. It's not the best, but it's fun. There are some plot holes, some not maybe plot holes, but logistics of like, why is the bad guy doing this? And how did they come to this conclusion? But that's just getting too much in the nitty gritty of it. If you don't like Marvel movies, this won't win you over. You won't like this. But if you do like Marvel movies, you will enjoy this. It's a fun movie. I give it 8 flurkins out of 10 flurkins.
Ah,
it does.
Feels good, doesn't it? Because we're, what, this was film 22 or was it 23?
No, really.
What number are we on? It feels like 10. It's just, think of all that we've gone through to get to this point. You know, how is it that we started with just one film of a billionaire playboy genius philanthropist being stranded in the desert and having to build an armor out of steel to save himself and then start saving the world? I mean, there's a lot of moments that happened, and mm-hmm. given where we're at right now, Ryan, I'm glad it took I'm glad I took this ride. Are you? God, yes. I would hope so.
All the pieces are here now, and it makes me more excited for the future. Like seeing this, I'm like, great things are coming our way, Jay. Great things are coming our way.
I like that thought. So, well, here we are, where we've pretty much reviewed the heck out of Captain Marvel. There are some other things that I'm sure that we'll think of in the meantime, but I will say that this is certainly something that you should see on the biggest screen possible, and hopefully we'll be coming back to you sooner than the last time, because, hey, the snap took something out of us, all right? And we know that there were a lot of other movies that came out in our absence, but listen, some of us lost friends. Some of us lost family. Some of us lost dogs. Some of us lost their change. Some of us lost their pants. Who knows? But now we're back. And so, Ryan, what now with all this knowledge, is this final closing thought, what do you have any predictions? Do you have any thoughts now that we're heading into Endgame? Do you have any random things that are just popping out of the top of your head, or maybe just like the one thing you'd like to see that happens next now that we have everything in front of us?
I'll take your question, Jay, and I will give you a question. So for the future, for Endgame, Avengers Endgame, because we were talking about mid-credits and how, you know, save the most important end credit for the very end and save the funny one for the middle. Do you think Avengers Endgame will have even an end credit? Because in a way, this Endgame is kind of, just even the title, Endgame, this is like closing a chapter on the Marvel Universe. Do you think they would try to lead something into the future? Or would it just be like, you know what, kids? This was a fun ride. Just enjoy it. So do you think there will be... So two questions. Do you think there will be a post-credit? Do you think there will be no post-credit? Or do you think the post-credit would be happy or serious?
In the interest of not taking jokes to their next logical order, it's like, well, Ryan, I take your question and I raise you. I actually don't have a question to raise you with. My answer is I hope that they don't. But because this is a giant machine, I'm pretty sure they're going to. So I would like Endgame to have more of a finality to it, just because, you know, I don't know how much more of the phases you want right here, especially if we're all under the assumption that Captain America is going to freaking die. And what is Bucky going to take the mantle and all that stuff? You know, this is going to be an emotional one. It's probably some of the most emotionally invested movies that I've seen in a while. And I'm curious as to where they'll go next. But let's be honest, it'd be nice if there was just a nice logical endpoint. It's like, you know what? We had our run. Let the other phases be for whoever has the fortitude and or the years left on their life to see them. Because I have no idea how much what there's. So a phase four, is there going to be a phase five? Who knows? I would like to know, but they're not going to tell us until they announce it. So, yes, my answer is I don't want one, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to get one. You know, what'd be neat, Ryan, is if they don't do one for theatrical release, but they do one for home video release. I would be okay with that. I think in the theater, it should be straight up awesome. But that's my hopes right now. So, well, Ryan, I wanted us to close out this episode by mentioning a very cool thing they did.
I can't believe we didn't talk about this. Thank you for bringing it back up.
Well, we are bringing about it because it's a great way to close out this episode, because we haven't done one in a while, and we actually haven't talked about him in particular in a while. Marvel, in their infinite wisdom, decided to make a all Stan Lee version of their comic book page turning intro for Marvel Studios. It was all of his cameos and all of his really cool appearances and all the cinematic universe stuff, and it was really great. I know there would be some complaints of finally we have the first female-led Marvel film and it leads off with a man. But this is Stan Lee. this is the man himself. And it was very emotional to see it happening, because the second you saw it happening, you were like, oh, did they? Oh, they did. And then You're just watching it. You're like, and then you're seeing all this stuff happen on screen, and then you start tearing up, and then you look around, you see everybody else tearing up, and then it goes to black, and then it they then Ryan, like Khan, with my last breath, I spit at thee. They then add another title saying, "Thank you, Sting." It was just like, oh god,
I'm in a glass case of emotions. Oh my god! But seriously, I was like that. Like, I wanted to cheer out loud, but no one else was cheering. So like, I was like, oh bad. But inside, so it was all eternal. Like, oh my god, the feels. To see all those great cameos of Stan, it was amazing. Loved it. But then yeah, simply to straight to black. And just a simple, thank you, Stan. I'm like, oh god, they did it again! Oh god! Oh, it's a fantastic way. Just right at the top. I thought that was impressive. Thank you, Stan. And because so many of the last couple Marvel movies, Spider-Man and the Spider-Verse, Deadpool, Once Upon a Deadpool, a couple others, they would do all these thank you Stans at the end of the credits or right before the beginning of the end credits. They're like, nope, right on top. Thank you, Stan. Oh, the feels, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So with all of the feels having been felt, it's time for us to bid adieu for this installment of The Nerd's Finest. We thank you, Stan, for giving us these wonderful stories to talk about. My name is Jay.
My name is Ryan. And Maya, in case you're listening to this in India, I hope you make it back safe. And remember, if you get lost in the Temple of Doom, to cover your heart.
Yes, cover your heart. And also, very important, alligator repellent, should you ever fall off a rope bridge because you cut it yourself. So we are looking forward to Endgame. There are some other things in the pipeline that are coming out, too. There are a couple of the movies coming out, but... yeah, we'll see you on the other side, Ray.